Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Well, welcome to the listeners of the Leaders Toolbox on Firehouse.com. I'm Rich Gassaway, the host of the program. And today we're in Atlanta, Georgia at Fire Rescue International. We've had a great opportunity to steal away a few minutes of time from Chief Kelvin Cochran of the Shreveport, Louisiana Fire Department and the incoming first vice president of the International Association of Fire Chiefs. And Chief Cochran's program here at Fire Rescue International, one of several that he's doing, is focusing on fire service culture, a very important topic to the fire service. Chief Cochran, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rich.
We want to start off with giving you an opportunity to kind of frame up for our listeners, what is it that we mean when we're talking about a fire service culture, and why is that so important to leaders in the fire service?
Well, fire service culture is actually embracing and preserving those traditions that have made us the organizations that we are today, while embracing the new ideas of new generation firefighters that will actually strengthen the fire service in the future. We're at a period in the history of the American fire service specifically where retiring baby boomers will be leaving in tremendous numbers within the next 3 to 6 years. And there's going to be a lot of institutional knowledge and tradition that's lost because it doesn't provide a lot of time to transfer knowledge and tradition to those up-and-coming officers and those new firefighters that we're going to have to hire. So to shape the future of the fire service, we really have to have a renewed leadership focus on shaping the culture, and I believe that starts at the company level in the firehouse.
Excellent. Now, during your program, you had talked about the gatekeeper of the negative trends. What does that mean, and why is that important?
Well, first of all, I want to put a focus on the positive trends. When we were hired in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, there were certain traditions that were passed on to us by previous generation of firefighters that even started in the 1800s. It was essential that firefighters were properly dressed. Uniforms were important. Maintaining fire stations, maintaining equipment, saying yes sir and no sir to officers, and those kinds of things. Honoring the chain of command, which is no matter how you felt about your leader, you had to respect your leader, and those kinds of things. Honoring the unity of command, those essential concepts of organizational structure and management, were well grained into us, and those are traditions that we must work to maintain because they are, as the song says, slip sliding away. The negative trends is to refer to leaders on a first name basis, not care so much about well maintained fire stations, clean fire apparatus, properly worn uniforms, and those kinds of things. In addition to that, there are certain fads such as tattoos, piercings, braids, dreadlocks, you know, tongue rings, nose rings, things that the new trends in the younger generation, that those things may be cool off duty and they may be totally acceptable off duty, but do not project the culture and image of professional firefighters, whether you're getting paid or not. Those things do not reflect the personality and character of fire service organization. And the gatekeepers are the company officers who are the first to actually witness those negative trends as they come in and have the first duty and obligation to nip those negative trends in the bud and do not allow them to take root in fire service culture.
Okay. That's a big challenge for company officers, but it's so important because it's what sets the pace for the organization and in the what is tolerated and what is not. What advice would you have for fire service leaders about how to eliminate or change a bad culture to be more positive or proactive? I would say that there's my listener out there who says, okay, I realize my culture in my department isn't where it needs to be, and we've been a lot of years getting to this state of where we are. How would they go about getting that turned around?
Well, I think they turn it around by something that has become, I think, taken for granted in recent years, and that is good old-fashioned strategic planning. That begins with establishing the department's purpose. Why do we exist, and who do we exist for? In the past, we've been referring to that a lot as our mission statements. Sometimes, especially if a department is comprised of mostly Generation X, Y, and Millennials, which is the case in some young fire departments. Strangely enough, the majority of their members now are X, Y's, and Millennial generations, and they don't fully understand the concept of organizational purpose or mission. So a department who has found themselves riddled with bad culture and want to figure out how do we turn it all around, need to start with redefining their mission. After the mission has been redefined, then a group of members of that fire department at all levels of the organization should ask themselves and define, what are our core values? What do we actually stand for? And list those core values collectively and document those core values for all members of that organization to see. In addition to having a mission and purpose and core values, then you recruit and hire people that actually have those core values, organizational values, as their personal values. One of the best ways to maintain good culture and embrace new good culture is to do not hire people whose personal values do not align with your organizational values. Everybody in our community is not cut out to sacrifice their life for strangers. Everyone in our community is not cut out to risk their own personal well-being to help someone in need at the command of a company officer who says, I believe we can save this person. Some people in their core values will bail out. There are some people in their core values, if that officer says, I believe we can do it and save without hurting ourselves, some people will follow that leadership. So the people who don't have those core values, we cannot allow into our fire departments. And unfortunately, there are some people in our fire departments who don't have those core values, who are have been there for a while, and some who are in leadership positions. So departments have to have rules, regulations, policies, and procedures that govern proper conduct and behavior. And whenever individuals who don't embrace our organizational values because of their personal values cross those lines, then there should be progressive, corrective action to deal with that behavior. And if they repeat that behavior, well, let me say this. The good thing is sometimes corrective action can change a person's disposition and align themselves with the personal, with the organizational core values, at least while they're at work. Now, there are some people who are very good at a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of thing because they love our work, they love the job, and they'll straighten out when they come to work and then cut up when they get off work. So, but there are very few people who can negotiate a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde personality over the course of a career. So eventually their true colors will show up. But a department has to have corrective procedures that ultimately get them the heck out of our fire department so that they can display that behavior with a profession that's more suitable for their disposition.
You had talked about getting the right people into the organization, something that Jim Collins in his book, Good to Great, talks about getting the right people on the bus. sounds easy, but how do we, what do we do to make sure that those people we're hiring in have or share or we're willing to embrace our core values, our beliefs? Is there testing?
Yes, there are several things. It's extremely challenging, first of all, in departments that do not have the infrastructure in place in their county or city government. And Lord knows it's a tremendous challenge for volunteer organizations who have human resource personnel and funding. But there has to be initial testing processes, written and oral testing. There has to be structured oral interviews. There has to be physical agility testing. And there has to be psychological testing, background checks and investigations, polygraph exams, and those kinds of things. There's a collection of things that fire departments can do that consecutively and consequently evaluate the core values of individuals that fit the organizational values of the fire service. When those processes are properly derived by competent professionals in their field, they actually do their job. We end up hiring people that their personal values fit the overall core organizational values of our fire department. Some people slip through the cracks, but for the most part, those testing processes do their job.
Okay, that's good advice. What are some of the components that maybe help shape a fire department's culture?
Well, I think it all starts with the top. It starts with the leadership of the organization demonstrating and walking the talk of the core values, demonstrating and modeling a mission-driven mindset as a leader, because the core values tie into the mission, and so leaders have to actually embrace the core values and model those and be mission-driven leaders. I think that the three dominant cultures that shape fire department culture is the leadership culture, the decision-making culture, and the communications culture. And leaders today in the fire service have to be predictable, they have to be accessible, they have to be visible. No matter how large or small our organizations are, there's an expectation of leadership today unlike the expectation of leaders when we came to work in the 70s and 80s and 90s. Autocratic leadership does not cut it when that is the sole style that the leaders use. Laissez-faire leaders don't cut it. The ones that just do whatever the crew says to do or do whatever the members say do. On the other hand, democratic leadership doesn't work. That a leader takes a vote or gets a consensus every time he has to make a tough decision. But the beauty of it is that the leader that embraces all three of those styles and use them in the right situation is what's expected of the new generation of leaders. So that whole concept of situational leadership, you use autocratic when it's appropriate. Use the laissez-faire, do what the members want to do when it's appropriate. And you build consensus before you make a decision when it is appropriate. But do not choose one of those styles and just use that style all the time. And when that mindset is embraced, from the fire chief down to the company officer, it shapes the leadership culture of an organization.
Interesting. And again, some good advice. How about the decision-making culture? How does that factor?
There's a very interesting principle that'll take two or three series of these shows to really adequately explain. But the concept is, whenever we make decisions that impact our members, the members that are impacted should be a part of the decision-making process. I'll say that one more time. Whenever we make decisions that impact our members, the members that are impacted should be a part of the decision-making process. Today's fire service members do not like decisions being made at the top and then passed off to them to implement without them having any say-so in the decision-making process, especially at the company level when they're the ones who are going to have to carry it out and then monitor and enforce it if it's not carried out properly. In many instances, our members have valuable information and insight, even experience, that can add value to the quality of the decisions of fire chiefs. So, and they are smart people, and smart in spite of what we may have thought about them in the past. Even rookie firefighters are bringing good knowledge and expertise to the table to add value to organizational decision making. So, to shape the decision making culture for our to impact the overall culture, the decision making culture has to embrace the concept when we make decisions that impact our members, the members that are impacted, to be a part of the decision-making process.
Now, are you talking, Calvin, about doing this in the form of committee work, or how is it that a chief goes about involving the people who are going to be impacted? Do they name people who are going to be representatives? If they're a union organization, is it the union leadership that is the voice of the membership? How do you go about getting that? I'm going to throw my term on it, to get their fingerprints on these ideas and these changes that you want to bring to the organization. Give me a morsel of advice for a leader who would want to involve people like that.
All of the above, depending on the decision-making issue and the impact it's going to have on the organization. For example, if a fire chief is going to make a decision that is on a training issue that the men and women in the emergency operations side of the job are going to have to follow or be impacted by, that fire chief has to consult with the training chief or the training officer that's responsible for training. Since it's going to affect their operations people, that fire chief has to include the shift commander or the battalion chief or an accompany officer who's going to be responsible and impacted for that decision before a final decision is made. It does not necessarily mean that the fire chief has to call a meeting to get the training chief, the shift commander, battalion chief, and a company officer in one room and discuss it to make a decision. He or she, as chief, can consult with those persons one at a time or two at a time or call a meeting. But there has to be a process involved where everybody that's impacted by whatever that training issue is included in the process before a final decision and plan of action has been developed. It gives the leader the best chance of covering all bases up front rather than making a short-sighted decision, implementing a training program that does not include the shift commander, the battalion chief, and the company officer, and then find out that there are things that were overlooked and were not considered. And that's just one of many, but it's really all the above. There are some issues that are labor intense that you want the executive board on board before you make a decision. And there are some decisions that affect the entire organization, especially long term, where a strategic planning team made up of chief officers, company officers, firefighters, communications officers, actually plan the long-range goals of a fire department. And so strategic planning teams is a group process of making decisions long-term. And there are still, even in light of that principle, decisions where you don't have time to consult or call a group together. So leaders still have to make autocratic decisions when they don't have time to consult, to develop a consensus in a group, or to delegate a decision to a more competent, capable person.
Okay. Now, we've kind of danced right up to the edge of it, but you had said that leadership and decision-making and communications were the components of that shaped culture. Could you talk a little bit more about the communications piece of it?
Yes, and I guess because of our time, let me just say that all information available to the public should be made available to the members of our fire department. Members of fire departments want to know what's going on in their organization. They prefer hearing information about their fire departments from their fire chief rather than through the local media or in some cases through their next door neighbor. It is, I think, incumbent upon leaders to keep a constant flow of quality information flowing from the top down to the company level members, and to have a communications culture where there is acceptance and a pipeline where members on company levels can get information and ideas and feedback from the bottom up to the upper levels of leadership. That's essentially what shapes the communications culture. Lots of good quality information constantly flowing from the top, and a conduit or pipeline of access to get information from the company level up to the top. And again, another important piece of the communications culture is no secrets. And actually getting that message across to the members that there is literally no information that cannot be made available to you except for decisions on discipline, confidential information about individual members, and plans that are so in their infant phase that it would be sort of, tragic to reveal them too early before they're fully developed. So other than those three things, decisions on discipline, confidential personal information, and plans that are new and not fully developed, everything else should be communicated somehow or another to the members of a fire department. And members need to have a way of getting their ideas and feedback up to the chief.
Now, there are some, tragically speaking, there are some people who think that information is power, and if they have it and they hold it, that somehow they're stature in the organization is elevated, but that can be pretty dangerous or pretty damaging to the organization
and to that leader personally. And that has a direct negative impact on the decision-making culture and the leadership culture. If a leader believes that the more information they have, the more powerful they are, and that if they pass off knowledge and information, then it diminishes their power and their influence. That's one of those old school, antiquated fire chiefs who hopefully does not exist, but unfortunately we know some of them are still there. But I would dare say, Rich, that person is not enjoying coming to work every day, because when you hoard information, it's very difficult to build meaningful professional and interpersonal relationships with the people that you work with. And that's the downside of hoarding information, that, you know, it doesn't allow you to build relationships, because it just shows that you are a person that has an issue with trust. And free-flowing information is an indication that the leader is trustworthy and that he trusts the members of his organization.
Again, some excellent advice. Kelvin, in your presentation, you had talked about some different kinds of culture, that like there isn't just one kind of culture that is all-encompassing for the organization, but maybe within the organization there's subcultures that are alive and well at different times and in different ways. What are some examples of those and maybe how they interact?
There are subcultures related to an assignment or a division of labor. That culture is essentially a culture that, for lack of the appropriate word, I'll just use group culture, and it's not there on our list of things. But being on a truck company brings a certain culture. Truckies, as we affectionately refer to them, defines that the culture of people on truck companies is different from the culture of persons assigned to engine companies. So some of our subcultures are based on our assignment. The culture of the communications officer's shift is different from the culture of B shift because of the nature of communications officer's work. But there's also training culture, and I'll use this for an example. It is a trend in the fire service that high call volume companies, when they have downtime, spend time training. And that low call volume companies who don't have a lot of responses do the least training. That high call volume companies do the most training, and in some cases people say it's not as necessary because they have lots of hands-on experience. So that's a training cultural issue, to where company officers are in full of control of the training culture. And what culture, the good culture we're trying to promote in the training culture, is when you are assigned to a low call volume company, your training hours should increase. When you're assigned to a high call volume company, it makes sense that the training hours decrease because you don't have time for the training because of your high call volume. Another aspect of training culture, company officers have to ask themselves, are they maintaining the basic level skills that rookie firefighters master while they are in their recruit academies? For the most part, the last time firefighters in America, if they've been on the job 3 years, for the most part, the last time they had a buddy breathing class was when they were in rookie school 3 years ago. For the most part, the last time they raised a 35-foot ladder with three people was in their rookie school 3 years ago. The training culture at the company level is that the company officer has to have the mindset, my job is to maintain the basic skill levels, especially survivor skills, that firefighters get when they're in rookie school. And that if those skills diminish over time, it is the responsibility of the company officer. And if in fact they have neglected that duty, it is their responsibility to set a course of training programs where they enhance those basic skills and get them back where they need to be.
Okay. Kelvin, just some tremendous advice for fire service leaders, and unfortunately, we just do not have the time to commit to this topic here on the podcast. But I do know and have sat in on your programs on fire service culture and leadership, and you're such a dynamic speaker, and the people who sit in on your programs come away just so charged and rejuvenated toward the topic of culture and leadership and just good ethical leadership too. Where might someone go to get some additional information that might tie in or further advance their understanding of this topic?
Well, Jones and Bartlett Publishers has a great new book called The Chief Fire Officer's Desk Reference. Has great renowned fire service leaders as authors, and there are several chapters that hit on this topic of fire service culture. It'll be a great read. Also in 2006, I had the opportunity of being a columnist for Fire Rescue Magazine, and there are 12 articles that touch on fire service culture at some point from a minimum to a significant degree that can be accessed.
Okay, and if someone wanted to, say, hear you in person, is there something, some venue coming up, say, within the next year that they might be able to schedule themselves to come and sit in on one of your presentations?
There are a few for 2008, but I think the easiest to recognize and remember for our listeners would be the Maryland Fire and Rescue Institute Staff and Command course, March 2008 in Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay, and for our listeners who might want more information on that, that would be at www.mfri for Maryland Fire Rescue Institute, www.mfri.org. And Kelvin, if one of the listeners wanted to follow up with you and get some additional information or talk to you about a presentation opportunity or to share some knowledge with you, what's the best way for someone to reach you?
Rich, the best way to get me is shreveportfire.org. That's the website of the Shreveport Fire Department that I'm honored to be the fire chief there. And they can get my contact information there.
Okay. Again, for our listeners, we were spending some time with Chief Kelvin Cochran of the Shreveport Fire Department and the incoming first vice president of the International Association of Fire Chiefs, and we're coming to you from Fire Rescue International in Atlanta, Georgia. Kelvin, thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure spending some time with you and talking about fire service culture.
It's been my honor, and I just want to encourage everybody to walk the talk and be safe.
Thank you.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
All right. Chief Cochran, thank you very much for joining us today here at FRI. And stick around for a little bit. We're going to talk with Rich Gasway about some of the ways that a leader can change the culture when it goes off track in the fire station. Rich, what can a leader or a chief officer do to kind of get things back on track in the station when the culture shifts from good and positive to bad and negative?
Well, I think that one of the most essential things for a leader to realize is they don't own the culture of the department. The members own the culture. And it's frustrating for a leader who is action-oriented to realize that maybe they're not able to make the changes as quickly or as easy as they might make other changes in their organization, because the culture has a great deal of complexity, as Chief Cochran had spoken to. You know, the culture has many facets and subcultures, and there's multiple cultures, and so it's kind of hard to get your arms around just the complexity of the culture, and then to try to figure out, you know, what's gone wrong and where has it gone wrong to be able to get it back on track. The culture, Pete, I'd like to kind of describe it as the personality of the department. And if you think of the culture as the personality of the department, and pause for a moment and think about the personality of an individual, imagine how difficult it might be if you set out to change the personality of an individual. And you know, there might be some out there who'd say, well, that'd be impossible. There might be others who'd say, well, you know, over time with the right amount of influence in the right environment, you might be able to do it. The one thing that I have observed is that people tend to behave in a way that conforms with their environment. In other words, if you're around a very positive and upbeat environment, you're more likely to be positive and upbeat. If you're around an environment that is negative and critical, then you tend to find yourself wanting to become negative and critical. So I think that one of the core objectives of trying to change the culture of the organization is to set out to try to create an environment that is not only positive and upbeat, but also one that embraces a organization's mission and their vision and their core values. And much like the way the culture has evolved over time, changing it is a slow, steady process that must occur over time. And it takes a great deal of persistence and perseverance on behalf of the leader, and perhaps the leadership team should expand that to beyond just the leader to bring forth that kind of change. One of the things that I think is essential to having a good organizational culture is to make sure that you have a strong mission, a strong vision, and a strong set of core values. And if your organization doesn't have those three things, that's not terrible, but it does create an opportunity here for you to get your members who own the culture together to help formulate the mission and the vision and the core values of the organization. And the reason you bring them together and involve them in that instead of just having it mandated down from the top of the organization is that they need to own it. They need to feel as though it was their ideas and developed by them, and they're more likely to embrace things that you feel you contributed to helping to develop. So you say, well, our organization has a mission statement and we've had one for 10 years. Okay, revisit it. Is it still accurate after 10 years? Corporations change and adjust their mission statements and their visions all the time.
Hopefully they're not making too many adjustments in their core values, that they have a set of core values that they are principled to and don't change that often. But the mission and the vision of organizations change regularly, and depending on where your organization is in its evolution, as if it's a changing environment or a stable environment, it's probably time to revisit it, even if you have it. Bring people together, get them focused on why do we exist as an organization, and where are we going, and what are the expected behaviors of our members as we do our jobs in our communities. And then I think after you have that mission and vision and core value set, is to define what is desired or acceptable behaviors. Because in the end, we're really not going to change the core of who people are, but we can certainly set expectations for the behaviors of how we wish them to interact with each other and interact with the customer when they're at work. So, defining what are these accepted or desired behaviors, and I think it's for each individual organization to define those. It's not for me to sit here on the podcast and tell you what they should be. Within your organizations, you have smart people. Ask them, what are the desired or acceptable behaviors of somebody? If we had a strong, positive, customer-driven, oriented culture, how would our people behave? What would that look like? And ask them, and then capture that. Here's what they would do. Here's how they would act. Here's how they would interact with each other. Here's how they would interact with customers. And then as the leaders, being the chief of the department and other formal and informal leaders, officers, union leaders, need to model that desired behavior, whatever that list of desired behaviors are. They need to model them. Among them, I would expect that there would be certainly an element of ethical behavior that would be expected of everyone, that everyone would be honest and fair and trustworthy, and those types of things that define a strong ethical organization. I think that the leaders need to not only be ethical, but they need to role model whatever the mission and vision and core values are. They need to walk the talk. They need to be the ones that the organization looks at and says, that person is living our organization's values. They embrace our vision, mission. That can't just be one person. That can't just be the chief of the organization, because there's not enough of that one person to go around. That needs to be a group of people who have access to all these different subcultures within the organization, so that members see that behavior. We tend to emulate what we see. Like I'd said before, if you're around positive and upbeat people, you tend to be more positive and upbeat. If you're around negative and cynical people, you tend to be more negative and cynical. If you're around people who have strong core values and who believe in the mission and the vision, then it's easier then for you to have strong core values and to believe in the mission and the vision of the organization. And I think that a leader can set out to identify who these champions are. Who are these people that would embrace and model this type of desired behavior in the organization? And then I think that leaders should listen very carefully to what the members are saying for why things are the way they are. Why is our organization the way that it is? What is it about our culture that we don't like or we want to see changed? And ask those questions, ask the tough questions, and expect that you're going to get tough answers if you get people that are being honest with you about what it is about the organization that needs to change that would make it more oriented to the mission or the vision. And capture those things and set out then to slowly over time set to change those things with a plan of action. I think that the leaders as a group these, again, formal and informal leaders, you need to communicate the expectations of behavior to the members on a regular basis. In other words, maybe not like be in their face about it, but on a regular basis, be communicating what it is that we expect of an organization that has good core values and are true to the mission and the vision. And then I think that there's an opportunity there for leaders to help members make sense out of why things need to change. You know, what is it that needs to change and why does it need to change? And as leaders, if we're going to implement a change, we better have some good answers for why it is that we think that things need to change. What is it about our culture that is broken? You know, what is it that needs to be fixed? And it's not always crystal clear to the members that things need to be fixed as it might be crystal clear to the leaders. So it's going to take some selling of the concept of the need to change, and then help members cope with the stress of those changes as you try to get people to do things that are different than the habits that they have developed. That creates some stress, and if you have an organization that is culturally challenged, some of those people have turned that undesirable culture into habits and of undesired behaviors, and to get them to change that is going to be stressful. And as leaders, we need to be patient and helping them and realize that this is a slow process over time. We don't come to work on Monday morning and say, hey, I think I'll change the culture of the organization and I should have it done by the end of the week. That would be kind of like going to your orthodontist when your teeth are crooked and saying, hey, doc, my teeth are crooked. Can you have them fixed by the end of the week? Well, the orthodontist is going to look at you like you're crazy and say, no, I can't do that. If I did that, that would be very... it would be impossible to do that. To straighten your teeth is a slow, steady process over time. over the course of time, one day you'll look in the mirror and say, hey, I like how this looks now. And you will hardly even realize that it happened because it happened so slowly and methodically. And the same in changing the culture of the organization. Is if you try to do it too quick, you're going to traumatize the organization, and you're not going to be able to be successful with it. It is a slow, steady change over time, and at one point then you can look in the proverbial mirror and say, well, I like how the organization looks now. The culture is healthy as to what we had set out our core values and vision and mission to be, and our people are focused now. They're focused on the right things. I think that we as leaders need to pay very close attention to what behaviors we reward, punish, give our attention to, and ignore. And the reason this is so important is that as we're trying to change the culture of the organization, people are going to still be individuals and still behave like humans, and they're going to have flaws, and they're going to have indiscretions, and they're going to make mistakes, and they're going to do some wonderful things as well. And I think that we need to, as leaders, pay very close attention as to what we're rewarding and what we're punishing as behavior. So if we set out to say, you know, in our new culture, we're going to now do 1, 2, 3. And you know, at the first go at it, somebody doesn't do 1, 2, 3. They only do 1 and 2. I think that leaders under this circumstance need to be very patient and understanding and not expect perfection of their members as they try to go about instilling this new culture, but maybe they only get 1 and 2 done and they flub on 3, is give them some encouragement for at least doing 1 and 2 and making an effort, and give them some encouragement for what they tried to accomplish with 3, and maybe some coaching as to how next time they can accomplish number 3, so that the next time they do 1, 2, and 3. And then when they do, reward them with recognition or some kind of affirmation, praise. Let them know that you've seen them do what it is that you want to have done, and that you appreciate that they're doing it. All too often, leaders go around looking for blame as if there's some kind of reward when they find it, and that's a tough way to create the right culture in an organization, as everyone is laying low in their foxholes, trying to avoid getting into trouble. And if we're gonna change the culture of an organization, we have to set those behavioral expectations, and then go out in the organization and find our people doing it right, and reward them, not finding them doing it wrong and punishing them. You know, there's an old saying that says, you know, the beatings will continue until morale improves. You know, and you gotta kind of look at that and laugh at the how bizarre that statement is, you know, we cannot create a positive culture by continuing to find fault in our people as they go about doing their business. But look at that, when they're not doing something we want them to do, find a way to coach them in an encouraging way as to how it is that you want to have something done, along with an explanation as to why this is important and why we want to see something done differently. I think as leaders, we need to pay very close attention to who we recruit into our organizations, how we go about selecting people for promotions, and be very diligent about not advancing the wrong people in the organization for the wrong reasons. And that takes a lot of courage to look in the organization and say, here's somebody who does a great job as a firefighter, but is not a good leader of people and doesn't support a positive culture and not advancing them for the right reasons. But when you don't advance them, give them an opportunity to understand why, so that they can change and make themselves in a better position to maybe be promoted the next time around. Hopefully you'd give them plenty of coaching in advance of the promotional opportunity to try to change that behavior before you ever have to turn them down. But as you know, and I know, there are people who won't change no matter how much opportunity we give them, no matter how positive an environment that we set them in. You know, I don't live in a make-believe world. I know there are people out there who find enjoyment in trying to create trouble and controversy and keep things stirred up in the organization. What I'm saying is don't promote those people into positions of leadership where their formal influence then can go about making things worse instead of better. I think it is important for us as leaders to hold people accountable for their undesired behaviors, and to coach and counsel them when their behaviors don't meet our expectations. I think that what we as leaders tolerate, we endorse. So if we see somebody doing something that is undesired and we turn our back to it, or we know about it and we don't address them and hold them accountable, then we endorse that behavior. If we allow it, that's like telling the organization, you're doing that undesired behavior with my blessing, because it isn't addressed. And that's why it takes more than just the chief of the organization. It takes a group of people dedicated to wanting the organization to have a good, strong culture, because there has to be people around all the time who hold people accountable and hold those undesired behaviors in check, so that they're not allowed to perpetuate into continued repeated undesired behaviors, because that's how a culture takes a turn for a worse. Remember that it's a slow change over time, and it's owned by the members. As if I can't say it enough, finding a way to reward and recognize people who are doing the desired behaviors. And you notice it's all focused on behaviors. It isn't about personalities. It's about behaviors. It's about performing outwardly in a way that supports the organization's core values and mission and vision. And my final piece of advice for leaders is do not expect perfection. People are going to make mistakes. They're going to get tripped up. They're going to take two steps forward and one step back. And to be patient and allow that culture to change or evolve over time. And as a leader, we have to be willing to commit the kind of personal attention and resources to seeing that, seeing it through. Because it is, there is no quick fix for changing the culture of an organization.
Okay, Rich, thank you very much. And again, very much thanks to Chief Cochran from Shreveport. We will be posting a forum section to kind of talk about the culture in your firehouse and maybe some ideas. You can pass along some ideas on some stuff that may have worked or may not have worked despite attempts to make things better in your town. So if you can check out the forums link at the bottom of this podcast page, we'd appreciate it. And feel free to leave some comments.
Hey, Pete, for the forum, I think the forum is a wonderful idea. I would put a challenge out to the listeners because it's often very easy for people to write in on a forum and identify a problem or identify what isn't working. I put a challenge out there for the listeners that if you come up with a problem, offer a solution. And so that we can all learn from each other and that we can all try to work collectively to try to better the fire service. So if you have an idea or if you have a observation about a problem in a fire department, yours or another, offer up some constructive solution that a leader might be able to put into place, because that's really what the Leader's Toolbox is about. It's about trying to give us all, myself included, new tools that can help us do our jobs better.
Okay. All right, so take a look at the bottom of this podcast page to find a link to that forum thread. Again, thank you very much to both chiefs for joining us here today at Fire Rescue International, and we'll see everybody next month. Thank you.
Thanks, Pete.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.